welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco and I talk about how, six debates in, the Democratic candidates finally got asked about reproductive health. Yay? Then Dana Schwartz, Kieran Deal, and Tien Tran join to discuss costumes, from Halloween to what we're expected to put on every day as we move through the world as women. Then, as always, the hills will die on. Before we get started, some housekeeping. If you want to submit a hill you'll die on, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. Also, if you have a question about navigating a tough situation at work or how to make friends as an adult, or like somebody did a few weeks ago, if you just want to ask us how we feel about romantic comedies, you can send us an email at hysteria@crooked.com with your question, and we'll go over the questions and pick the ones we like and answer them in our weekly video segment, Dude, You Asked. It's on Crooked Media socials, so tune into that. Now it's time for a wholesome recommendation. Wholesome recommendation of the week: clean your mirrors. Get a little Windex, squirt it on your mirror, clean it off. If your house is messy or if you're feeling kind of off, it really makes a huge difference and everything looks a little bit better, and it might just be the tiny little thing that helps you jumpstart your day. That's it. Let's get to the show. Hello?
Hello, Erin.
It's so good to hear your voice.
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice.
Alyssa, I have a question.
I'm so ready for my weekly question.
Okay. So, you know, like when a rock star has an electric guitar and they run with it across the stage, that's like awesome. It's like, whoa, they're so...
Yes.
Why is running with an electric guitar awesome, but running while playing an acoustic guitar, like, really lame?
So that's a really good question, and I'm not sure what sparked your interest in the matter, but mostly it seems like acoustic guitars are heavier.
Really? I mean, see, like, Bruce Springsteen...
I don't know why.
Bruce Springsteen can run with an acoustic guitar, but, like, just picture this. Just picture a guy with an acoustic guitar, like, strapped to the front of him running. That's weird. Like, that's absurd and funny. But an electric guitar, it's like, yeah...
It's like one is very like, is David Crosby okay running across the stage with his acoustic guitar? And the other one is like, wow, look at John Cougar Mellencamp run with that electric guitar.
It's one of those mysteries. I don't know if I'm ever going to figure it out, but I've been thinking about it for like 3 weeks and I can't solve it. I can't crack it.
Were you watching MTV or something? Like what triggered this train of thought?
No, nothing. Literally nothing. It fell from the sky and into my brain, and I've been thinking about it for a while. And I asked my brother about it, and he was like, I don't know either. So, yeah, a lot of brain power has been devoted to solving this problem. We can't solve it. But let's talk about the debate.
Another thing that we can't solve.
So they finally brought up abortion at the Democratic primary debate, finally, after how many debates have we had?
Six. Was that six?
I think it was that's so many debates, and we're still more than a year away.
Wait, did I make that up? How many have there been? I don't even know.
I think that this was like the fourth official like round of debates, but there have been six.
Like
actual,
those town hall. Yeah.
There have been six events. But here's something that, so it was the first time that abortion came up on stage. It's the first time moderators asked about it. But as The Atlantic's Emma Green pointed out, only two candidates on stage actually used the word abortion. Isn't that interesting?
People are still afraid, man.
Well, Tulsi brought it up in the context of people are still afraid, man. And Elizabeth Warren brought it up in the context of Elizabeth Warren just... you know, uses the words that she means to say, and that seems to be about it. So, Alyssa, were there any moments in the area of the debate that talked about reproductive choice that stuck out to you?
So, you know, I love Corey always leans in. You know, it's like, I feel like he's just always, this is what I will say about him. Everyone else seems very focused on the stage of like what they're going to say. And I feel like he's really keeping track of what people have talked about. And he's like, wait a minute, we haven't got here yet. But I mean, mostly I thought the most important point that was made is just like, look, guys, and it was by Warren. And it's what you were talking about where she said, guess what? Like, when abortion's illegal, like rich women are still going to be able to get abortions. Like, mm-hmm. This is about everybody else. And, you know, I just think that that's a point that needs to keep being reinforced. Like, if Roe is eroded, you know, rich ladies are always going to be able to take care of themselves. And it's the people who need it, who need the help the most, who will be, you know, sidelined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to bring it back to what Corey said, Kamala Harris was the first person to bring it up in the debate. She brought it up on a question that wasn't specifically about abortion, but she brought it up saying, like, come on, guys, we gotta bring this up. This is super important. This is super important in communities of color. And Cory Booker later in the debate joined her and said, and God bless Kamala Harris, which is like not, I was like, is he blessing her heart? And I was like, no, he's not. He said that men have a place in this debate as well, and men need to stand up. And I thought that that was a really important, a really important point, because, you know, it's great to have Booker on stage. It's great to have Castro on stage, who's also said things about women's health in the context of the primary. I think men and their position in this conversation are really important.
I agree. It's not just us to fight this.
No. So here's another thing I wanted to ask you about. So like Emma Green's piece in The Atlantic, which pointed out that only two people said the word abortion. Do you think that using the word abortion is important, or do you think that it's a little bit too confrontational for people that are still figuring out, they're still a little bit morally uncomfortable with abortion?
I feel we should use the word abortion, because it should be safe and legal and accessible. And, you know, the Supreme Court dealt with it in the 1970s. And so I genuinely think that we need to evolve, because people who don't want to use the word are still, it's like we got to get rid of the stigma, right? And by not using the word, I feel like we perpetuate the stigma. So I feel like we should use the word.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Although I hate to be this person who can see both sides, but I can see both sides. Like it's a lot easier to get somebody to vote for somebody who is, it's sort of like whatever it takes to get the ball across the goal line. If the goal line is like, we need people in elected office who will support abortion rights, and the way to get them into elected office is to, in some context, soft pedal using the most confrontational words in that debate, then maybe it's worth considering whether it makes sense to kind of temper our message. And maybe that's a kind of cop-out way to think, but that's something that I've been thinking about a lot.
No, it's not. I don't think it's a cop-out way to think at all. I just think that, like, in a democratic debate and in a democratic primary, people should probably say the word.
Yeah,
abortion,
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. I am fine if during the presidential commission debates in the fall, whoever the nominee is wants to use softer language, because we are appealing to all Americans, you know, in that instance. Here, I feel like, you know, I feel like just say the word.
Right. That makes sense. What did you make of Tulsi Gabbard's comments about abortion being safe, legal, and rare?
I didn't know what to make of her at all last night. I mean, it's like she definitely, you know, like the thing to take away from last night, I think, is like it's definitely like the last stand for a lot of people. Like several of them haven't qualified for the next debate. And so she came ready, I guess, to be the most conservative Democrat on the stage. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that was like her goal. And she used that very specific language in every subject matter. So I didn't feel like her tenuous approach to abortion was much different than a lot of her approaches to many things she attacked last night.
I mean, do you think she was auditioning to be a centrist commentator on cable news last night?
I think that we will see her be the Democrat on Fox News not long from now.
Yeah, that would not surprise me. I sort of hate the whole safe, legal, and rare way of talking about abortion. First of all, it's very 90s, and the 90s are back in many ways, but the 90s should not be back in the way that we talk about abortion. Also, like, safe, legal, and rare, I think, talk about stigma adding
totally.
To, I think that women who don't want to be pregnant should have every resource at their disposal to not get pregnant. And if they need to have an abortion, that should be readily available to them. That's
exactly right. Because when you say, when she says rare, it's, to me, it always feels like that without people like Tulsi watching out for us, we would just be having abortions at lunch and like, just stop.
Right. And also it sounds like a way to talk about steak, right? Rare. Look, I like mine well done.
What was that joke?
I like my abortions like Trump likes his steaks. Well done and legal despite other people's judgment. That is the worst joke I've ever written, Alyssa.
I don't know. That's funny because I thought it was funny yesterday. I think it's funny today.
I texted that to you in confidence. let's talk about Bernie.
Yes.
Is he a cyborg? Like, did he get a new heart from the same heart farm that Dick Cheney gets all of his hearts?
He came back stronger than ever. And I mean this as a compliment, but he came back like a megavirus. Like, he is resistant to all strains of attack right now.
Yeah, it's weird. I've never been a person that's, I'm like a rare person who's Bernie curious. Like, I support many of his policies, but I've never been all in for him. But I've never also found everything that he's said to be like totally egregious. Like, he's somebody who I'm mostly politically in line with, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. But I'd never call myself a Bernie bro. But you know, I agree with a lot of things he said. But I've also found him a little bit cantankerous and unpleasant in public appearances before. And at the debate last night, he was just like, he was angry, but not in a way that felt alienating to me. He was just like, I mean, I know I'm assessing him like how people assess female candidates, but I found him to be really, he seemed to be very honest, open, fresh, accessible, and angry, but rightfully so.
So, yes, fully agree. I have a couple thoughts on this. One, maybe once you've had a heart attack, you really look at things differently. I don't know. Two, Bernie has been the face of, you know, democratic socialism, if we want to call it that, for the last 30 or 40 years. And he's been the one defending his beliefs by himself for that entire time. Mm-hmm. And last night, I would definitely say that EW was, you know, deflecting arrows that were being shot at her face. Mm-hmm. And so maybe he also was just like, it's super rad to not be the only person defending healthcare as a human right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and that's another thing we should talk about. The way that Elizabeth Warren was treated in the debate indicated to me that a lot of people are sort of acknowledging begrudgingly that she's the front runner.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you think she handled herself?
I thought she did well. You know, I think that when you have that many people coming at you from every single angle, I mean, Mayor Pete certainly came loaded for bear. I was shocked when Beto said that she has a punitive approach to things. I feel like on the merit that people were a little bit more personal in their attacks to her. And I know I personally would have been red in the face. My ears would have been red and I probably would have started to sweat. So I thought that she did a really good job. And the other interesting thing is that whereas really, I guess at the, you know, at the end of the day, she and Bernie are the two people who are most competitive with each other, right? Because their belief set is most aligned. And I, correct me if I am wrong, because it was 3 hours and I did go to the bathroom once or twice. I did not see him take any swipes at her personally, like policy wise. I mean, aside from the fact that she says very clearly, I am a capitalist and he is not, mm-hmm. but that's a fact. And I just thought it was interesting. If there was one person who I thought would have wanted to like elbow her in the gut to get her off stage, it would have been him, and he did none of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was really, I thought that was an interesting dynamic at play. Joe Biden seemed like he was sort of, I think Jill Filipovich tweeted that every time it seems like he's going to say something, he just kind of floats away. And that was how I felt, that's how I felt about Biden. I want to move on to one more thing, though. At the end of the debate, or around last evening, whatever, who can say what time is the construct, as Kieran Deal would say? The squad endorsed Bernie last night. Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib threw their endorsement behind Sanders last night. What do you make of that?
So I have a couple thoughts on this. One, Ayanna Pressley, also member of the squad, did not, but recall she's, you know, from Massachusetts, so I feel like she probably couldn't, because I think EW did a lot for her. I say this, there are a lot of politicians out there who sit in, you know, their offices and bite their nails and pick their cuticles and are like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Am I going to endorse someone? It's like, I don't want to miss the train, but then I don't want to endorse someone and have them not do well. And I will say that the three of them were just like, fuck that shit. We believe in Bernie and we're going all in. And I give them a lot of, credit for that, because, you know, I don't like using the word like politically courageous, but they're just fucking being honest and they don't care about the blowback or what people say. And I was proud of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate when I feel myself thinking like a pundit, but it's in my body and I can't get rid of it. Horror movie style. There was something about their endorsement. I'm glad that they feel comfortable endorsing the candidate that most reflects their values. But here's my thought. The fact that they didn't endorse Warren is a little bit of a blessing for Warren, I think.
Definitely.
Because those three women, for better or for worse, have been painted as, you know, the embodiment of the three or four horsemen of the apocalypse or whatever, by people on the right. And they're used to really whip people up into a frothy froth. And so I think that if they would have endorsed Warren, it would have given people on the right more fodder to pretend that Warren is going to be this extreme, you know, socialist. She's going to, you know, take everybody's property and give it to a bunch of like gay communes or whatever. Like, I think
if they had endorsed Warren, it would have been like flaming vaginas running through the city being like, see, they're coming for everything now.
Right, right. I mean, Steve Bannon has been kind of sounding the alarm that like, Me Too is totally upending the social order or whatever. And I think that fear is at the root of the fear of the squad, because they're like, well, these women are in charge. And when these women are in charge, they're going to treat us just as bad as we treated them when we were in charge.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. Okay, Alyssa, I have a roast that is so hard that I think it's flipped all the way over to toast.
Like, please proceed.
Okay. So, you know that I love holiday movies and holiday themed things. And you know that I love puns also. And you know that I love batshit pitches based on puns. Like, you and I have done this. We've gone back.
It's really you in a basket, quite honestly.
Essentially, yes. Okay. So yesterday, this tweet came across my feed about a forthcoming movie from Netflix called The Night Before Christmas. And night is spelled with a K. So here's what it said. Vanessa Hudgens and Josh Whitehouse star in the perfectly titled holiday rom-com, The Night Before Christmas. She plays a kind science teacher who has been disillusioned by love, and he's the cursed medieval knight she must help return to his home. First look, and there's like, it's a holiday movie about time travel. Anyway, I feel like what happened here is that somebody at Netflix or some screenwriter that's like in enough that if they just go into a room, an exec will be like, yeah, write that. Well, sure, we buy it. They're starting with puns and they're making up movies around the puns. And that is so bad. That is such bad practice that I almost have to respect it. It's like, it's a kind of genius in its own way.
Well, I feel like we just need to send out as many holiday theme movie puns as we can and see if we can get them to make more.
I think we should dare Netflix to make a movie called Don We Now Our Gay Apparel,
Which, and what would that movie be about?
It would be a divorced dad named Don who designs clothes and whose kids tried to find him a boyfriend for Christmas.
I'd watch it.
Okay. Also, like, I think a lot of Christmas lyrics have like a horror movie bent to them.
Obviously.
Like the, like Santa Claus is coming to town, you know, he sees
you. Like, it's, he sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. I mean, that is like prime Lifetime horror movie starting the day after Thanksgiving.
Right. So here's what I think we should do, Alyssa. I think we should come up with, you know what? I think we should tweet about this. I think I'm going to tweet at you a random holiday lyric and you're going to respond with the synopsis. And we're just going to do this over and over again until we die or are banned.
You know what? And I bet people love it because guess what? Twitter needs more holiday shit sooner.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I mean, thank goodness for Halloween. It is the, it is just like the final holding wall between Christmas and just anarchy. Cause it would just be all year.
I can't wait to put on my mistletoe headpiece any day now.
I can't wait to put on my, put my mistletoe pumpkin outside on my porch. And I don't know. It's all the holidays all the time. Okay. Alyssa, do you have a toast or a roast?
I do. Quick shout out. So many shouts out actually to Ann Curry of NBC Today Show fame. Ann Curry was always fucking awesome. And then she sort of like ascended at the Today Show and Matt Lauer kind of kicked her out unceremoniously. I actually remember watching that show. And it turns out now that we know, thanks to Ronan Farrow, that not only was Ann Curry just fucking rad and smart on television, but she was actually behind the scenes trying to help some of these women who were being victimized, allegedly, at NBC. And I just like fucking good for her. I feel like she deserves a moment and I hope that she gets it because she kind of went away quietly and was still doing interviews. And now we just know that she was like fucking Wonder Woman.
I think Ann Curry is an object lesson in how doing the right thing and being patient can eventually lead to a feeling of vindication that doesn't involve you, you know, keying somebody's car.
She just, so if she had keyed someone's car, it would be completely understandable.
Totally acceptable. Like, don't vandalize things. But if you're Ann Curry, I think you have a right to key Matt Lauer's car.
There. That's how we're going to leave it.
That's how we're going to,
for the week.
That's how we're going to leave it. Matt Lauer deserves at least having his car keyed. Okay, Alyssa, great talking to you as always. And we'll chat more next week.
Next week.
Bye.
Bye.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicollet Avenue, which is where Alex Preddy was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Okay, we're back. We're back. We haven't been sitting here talking aimlessly for 25 minutes. Definitely not. This is the part of the show where I'm joined by three wonderful women to talk about things that we all find interesting. I'm going to introduce my panel today. First up, author of the forthcoming book, A White Man's Guide to White Male Writers of the Western Canon.
Nailed it.
Dana Schwartz.
Hi.
Oh, also host of Noble Blood.
Yes.
How's that going?
Really good. We had our, I'm doing like two spooky Halloween October episodes. Oh,
I love
spooky.
Our
first one launched yesterday.
Love spooky. Did you read about St. Olga?
Oh my God, it was so good. Love spooky. Love crazy.
Bloodthirsty
historical happenings.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, great to have you here.
Thank you.
Up next, we have actor and comedian who is currently appearing in NBC's Sunnyside and on the side of buses, Kieran Deal.
It's Bus Face Deal. We need your support, Hysteria. We need your support. We're moving to NBC.com. Next Thursday. It is a website that does not work.
So
that's
amazing.
Going to make it harder for you to watch it. But it's on Hulu, and hopefully it'll stay on Hulu because people will binge it. And
it's a really fun show.
I always say, you know, it's a first season show. I was like, if Parks and Rec or Friends or Seinfeld or any of those things, think about back to the first season on like an ensemble show like this. It's like stuff takes a second. Even if it's like it just takes a second for it to all to come together.
The first season of Parks and Rec, they like made Leslie Knope like Michael Scott. It was really bad.
Yeah, and then they had to retool into second season. It's like they figure a lot of stuff out between seasons, and it's like it just takes a second. Schitt's Creek, I mean, all of these, it just takes a second. So
well, I've really been enjoying it. I've been watching it. I've been streaming it like a true millennial, and I've really been enjoying it. Up next, we have actor and comedian Tian Tran.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
I feel like it's been a minute.
I know. It's really good to be here.
I'm glad to have you back. What have you been up to?
She's been wearing overalls.
I'm
wearing dungarees.
I'm dressed
dungarees.
Like, I'm dressed like goth Mario right now. I realized that as I like left the house, I was like, oh, man, I should have thought of something just a little different.
I realized that as I was crawling out a pipe and into another pipe that led into a new world,
that I was dressed.
I popped up here.
Mario is a little goth.
But you look 12. I was.
Do I look 12?
Yeah, you look. Well, I mean, whenever I think of dungarees, as they call it in the old country.
I guess I'm not helping myself. I do think people think I look younger than I am. And I think this outfit in particular really makes me look like a teen. I'm happy about it.
Yeah, I got some shit yesterday for tweeting that Pete Buttigieg is middle-aged. He's 37. He's 37 isn't middle-aged. I'm in my 30s.
Yeah.
But I am cruising toward getting old. I can't wait to be old.
I think all people running for president are middle-aged.
Yeah, you are
by definition.
Yeah.
If you're a big enough dork to run for president, you are middle-aged.
It's the dork factor, then.
It's the dork. Like, being a dork ages you.
He's only worn a button-down shirt for the last 10 years.
Yeah, right. He's got, like, a tan line of, like, the stitching in a button-down shirt.
So he was a 15-year-old growing into middle age. It was like...
Being a nerd keeps you young. Being a dork ages you.
That is such... That is so wise.
So brilliant.
I said it.
So you sit on pillows.
You're such a precocious teen.
Okay. You guys.
Okay, it's October, guys. Spooktober. If you're nasty, it's not Spooktober.
Spooktober.
It's regular October.
I don't know. What does that mean?
Spooktober. It's just putting a scary word. It's making a portmanteau that sucks.
Yeah.
Spooktober sucks. But anyway, I love October because it's Halloween season. And Halloween, as you all know, is a firewall between Christmas madness all year and the sanity of everybody dressing up like murder victims and all that, whatever. So I love Halloween. I love holiday-themed episodes. I want to talk today about costumes, but not just Halloween costumes. I want to talk about the costumes that we all wear all the time because, like, life is all the world's a stage and shit. So I'm going to start with you, Tian, because I think it's been the longest since I've seen you.
Yeah.
What has been your best Halloween costume?
Ever. I dressed up as Maddox Jolie Pitt in college.
Oh.
That is Angelina Jolie's adopted son.
Uh-huh.
And I...
Kieran turned around to, like, get information about who that was.
No, I turned around to be like, is anyone else hearing this? Because I can't turn to you while you're talking.
No, sorry. Well, you know, it was a time that he was a baby that had, like, a mohawk. Mm-hmm. And so I, like, got a mohawk wig and made a t-shirt that said, Brad's my dad. That's when they were still together. And I was at a college party once where Someone else was dressed up as Angelina Jolie, and we took, it was a complete stranger. She picked me up and held me on her shoulder, and I actually look like a child. I have that photo.
Show us the photo.
I'll show you the photo. Ask someone else while I look up this. Ask someone else while I look up this photo right
okay,
now.
Okay, Kieran, what's your best?
I just want to tag. I'll tell you what's the best. But the I was in Salem, Massachusetts, and one of the best things I've ever seen is two men dressed head to toe like leaves. They were dressed like covered in fall leaves. They kind of ran around in circles, and then one fell on the floor, and then the other fell on the floor, and then they were just like a pile, and it was very delightful.
I like that there's a performance aspect to
it. Oh, it was amazing.
I'm a grown woman in this photo. I just want you to know that I am.
How grown?
I'm like 21 in that photo. But like that other woman is this, like we are the same size, but for some reason the camera caught us at an angle that I look.
You look tiny.
I look tiny. I look tiny.
That's a lot. I like that. It's a lot. I mean, it's a lot's happening.
It's a great costume. I'm for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm really proud of it.
I'm for it.
Okay, let me tell you my best one. My best one is from the Halloween episode of Sunnyside.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm wondering if I can... Can I spoil it? What do you think?
Yes.
It is a completely handmade couture dress that they made out of like chalupa wrappers from Taco Bell, and the name of the character, it's like I'm Taco Bell, and it's the whole thing is just entirely made of wrappers, and it's a Bell costume,
like a Southern Bell,
Southern Bell, like Bell from Beauty and the Beast.
And the
whole thing is just entirely, it's like couture. It's
Bell I would outfit. Get married in that.
Which one is your best one without the help of a wardrobe department?
Tien. We're moving on.
Dana, what's your best one?
So I'm obsessed with Halloween costumes. I just want to get that out there that I love Halloween costumes and I love committing. But like my perfect Halloween costume is low effort, maximum impact. Like, because I'm not someone, I'm like, you know, there's people who like cosplay who's like, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. I'm like, really? And I'm like, no. The perfect Halloween costume is instantly recognizable and not too obscure, but still like unique.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know I'm building this up too much.
What are you talking about? Like, it sounds like you're doing a math problem. It's like, we need to get to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
I want the most elegant algorithm possible.
No, but that's to say, like, I don't like buying a lot of things. I like in college, I was Mia Wallace from Pulp Fiction, which everyone does.
Oh.
But I love doing the wig. And I worked at a lab. And so I stole a syringe and took the needle out, but put in a paperclip and had glued it to my chest, so I had a syringe sticking out of my
chest. Very cool.
And then this year, is that question coming next?
Oh, so, you can talk about what you're going to do next year.
I'm Fleabagging, but I'm committing. I'm like, this is the year everyone's going to do Fleabag. So I like got a wig and a nosebleed, and I have the jumpsuit and three Emmys. I tracked down. I'm like, I'm really doing.
Are they real Emmys?
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
The best part of your costume is definitely the real awards
they're
that
not,
you'll have.
They're not mine.
I know. But then somebody's going to let you
Are you
going to
carry them around all night?
Yeah, I'll carry them. And if I lose them, who cares? They're not mine.
I was going to say, your costumes actually sound, after the description, they sound quite basic. Because you're like, I'm doing what everyone is doing, and I'm just trying to do it in a way.
Okay, well.
That's. I mean, I'm being honest.
That's fair. Last year, I was... Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, I love that.
I was sexy Abe Lincoln one year.
So I was like, I was in like a corset and like showgirl from the neck down.
Uh-huh.
And then I was beard and hat from the neck up because I thought it was funny.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln is
That's a good one.
Any of the sexy founding fathers is a good one. Yeah, it really like, confuses
that is
people.
Sexy from the neck down and Abraham Lincoln from the neck up.
Yeah,
I like good. The low effort. One year, my girlfriend and I did, all we did was wear turtlenecks and leggings, same. I think we both wore black, and we printed out high res pictures. I like took a little string and put it around my neck of a camel, and she printed out a picture of a big toe.
I saw it coming from a mile away.
I was thinking too hard about it. I was like, thirst, desert.
I was like, toe is coming, baby. In Britain, I was in Britain for Halloween one year, and their Halloween
Humble
is
brag.
All. Well, I was born there, so it's like a lot of
Humble
my
brag.
A lot of my family's from there, and
again,
I'm better than you. I'm better than you, Dana. Is that humble too?
No,
I'm better than you. Okay, anyway, so the But in Britain, there's no sexy costumes. It's actually wild. It's like all about being battered and looking. It's like it's very violent. The costumes are quite violent. Oh. So I was like a battered ladybug. It's like the whole point is like look beat up, look messed up. I loved it.
Battered ladybug? What is the? Is there a pun there that I'm missing?
No, there's no
it's
pun.
Just a I was ladybug like, that got in a fight.
That's yeah. right. I was just a ladybug, but like with like just blood and like gore.
I love that.
And then the yeah. British people were like, yeah, battered, yeah, yeah. yeah. So get in a fight, yeah.
See, the point of the Fleabag costume this year is I'm dating someone and I can be like, just wear a collar and you're one of my accessories. You're the priest.
Oh, nice.
You just come with me. And he's like, I don't want
humble
it.
Brag.
Oh yeah, he could totally yeah. he could totally do the priest collar thing.
He does not want to dress up for Halloween, but I'm like, this is what you're here for.
Who is he? I want more information on this glaze, this I've, humble brag glaze.
I've met him. He's great. He's super nice. He's very cool.
He's a frequent hysteria listener.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hello to Dana's boyfriend who's listening.
I like the way he doesn't even get his own name.
Well, I mean, Dana is the one who is the shepherd of whether or not that gets injected.
I mean, he has a name.
Does he?
No, just
I
kidding.
Don't know. Hot priest.
Hot priest. Hot priest.
I think Dana's boyfriend's a pretty, like...
He's Canadian, but he's real.
Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah.
No, Ryan Reynolds is a myth. Everyone agrees. Let's talk a little bit about sexy costumes, because that's something that has sort of been the bane of my existence. If you go into a Halloween store where everything looks like it's going to give you a rash, most of the women's costumes are, none of them are not sexy.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? And have you ever dressed up in a sexy costume?
I liked being in Britain.
Where nobody was sexy.
No one was sexy. It was so dope.
I think it's sexier to be sexy around it. Like, mm-hmm. if you're just in, like, if you're, like, a sexy cop, fine. I think it's sexier to find your unique angle on a sexy costume.
Okay. Sexy cop.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying if you buy, like, an off-the-rack sexy costume,
oh, yeah.
I'm
oh,
well. Like, meh.
You have to add something to it.
Like, make it a little unique. Put a little personality in there.
Okay. Okay. Have you ever dressed in a sexy costume?
I mean, I dress in... these are all my college stories. I dressed as a sexy elephant.
That sounds right. I was... This is all tracking. This is all tracking for me.
Because my, like, faux sorority group of women that we didn't have sororities and fraternities at school, so, like, we were a group of women that just, you know, all hung out together.
We
all
did that, too, in
okay.
college, yeah.
And our senior year... We all decided to dress up as animals. And so I chose an elephant because I thought, because at the time I was still kind of being like, I don't really like this whole sexy high femme thing. Yeah. But I thought I could play it down with a huge elephant trunk on my face.
That's very funny.
Which I thought was fun. So I wore like a silver bodycon dress, which I like haven't worn in 15 years, and high heels and an elephant mask.
Wow.
And I felt okay.
Yeah. I wore a sexy maid costume one year in college. Not proud of it. But it felt like complete peer pressure. It was
yes,
like, well,
yes.
I guess we're all dressing up sexy for Halloween. And it felt like, okay, well, this is... I just didn't have the time to invest in, like, finding a creative costume. And I also didn't have a car. And so it was like, well, I guess I'm just going to the costume store and buying what there is. Yeah. And, like, that's what I'm going to dress up as. One of the things that I think about when it comes to, like, peer pressure and Halloween, it feels to me sort of like a microcosm of being a woman in general. Right. And I was thinking about that this past week when a lot of conservatives were giving AOC shit for paying $300 to get her hair cut and colored. For the unfamiliar, bless you, first of all, because it's a really annoying story. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I know this one.
Yeah.
I know this one.
Yeah.
She was getting some heat in the last week from conservative outlets who found out that she paid $300 for some low lights and a haircut, which, if you've ever gotten low lights and a haircut...
With tip.
That's reasonably priced.
She left
priced.
A very reasonable...
$52 yeah. tip, which is how much it fucking costs.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just going to say, I got my haircut yesterday, and it cost... And I did not get any color, and it cost more than that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like...
In Los Angeles, things are expensive.
Things are expensive, and also being a woman is expensive. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, you know, I feel like AOC was in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Like, you have to wear this woman costume, and fuck you for wearing this woman costume. Did any of you have any strong reactions to that story besides me. It made me so mad.
Yeah, I was furious.
It's just furious. It's just like so frustrating and such a crazy double standard.
Imagine what they would have said if like her hair looked bad.
Yeah.
It's like in our society, it's like in order for people to listen to the words coming out of your mouth, your face, if you're a woman, you have to look a certain way, but also fuck you for trying to look that way.
Yeah.
It made me think like even on a set, it's like the call time of a woman is normally 60 minutes. At least 60 minutes before any man. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, so you just have to get there an hour earlier for your hair and makeup to be done. Mm-hmm. Like you just have, like that's the, just because that's part of the prep, right? And those are professional people who mm-hmm. are going to try their best to make you look nice. And I think that's like a nice metaphor. The stress of like having to care what you look like is an interesting one as a person who has dressed like a garbage bag for my entire life.
Yeah.
It's something I don't really relate to, and so the stress of that when you do have to do it and how expensive it is it's like dealing with the traffic in the city or dealing with weather in New York. It's such a massive part of your life.
Yeah.
That you can kind of ignore if you're in a different place, but like you can't ever really step outside of mm-hmm. I mean you can step outside of gender, but then that's also a conscious choice.
I've also right? found that it's especially for dressing professionally, there's such like a narrow, so especially in this entertainment industry, I was like going to an interview and I was like, all right, I need to look nice but not like stiff and not like, you know, not like businessy because it's a creative industry. And like there's so much weird gray area for how a woman should dress, and I'm like, I just want to be able to wear jeans and a button-down shirt. Like, mm-hmm. I know, of course I could, but the male equivalent, the female equivalent of that for men, where it's like sometimes the way a man presents himself is so easy and accessible, and finding that equivalent as a woman is so tricky.
Mm-hmm. I read a Tina Fey article pretty early on where she's like, oh, you always like try to show up and dress nice for these like stylists or whatever. And she's like, and they're always in all black. And I just was like, all black. Got it. Noted.
Uh-huh.
And that's got how we Mario, have Yay,
got
in dungarees.
This morning, I was telling Tan, I woke up and I was like, what would Tan wear? And I put on a turtleneck. I think it's very chic.
Oh my gosh, I'm making an impact.
It's not your words that matter.
No, it's the way I look.
You're a star. That's all I care about.
Well, it's all about that meme that went around like a couple months ago, or was that a year ago, where Beyonce is dressed to like the absolute nines,
and Ed Sheeran
yeah. is looking
in a
like
t-shirt.
He's like in
a bin raccoon to bring it back.
A bin raccoon.
Bring it back to AOC.
Did he call himself a bin raccoon?
No. When AOC has a long-term partner who is a man who is, I would say, on the attractiveness scale, lower than she is.
Yeah.
By how much?
By like 5 points.
4 or 5 points.
Whoa.
What's the scale?
Out of 1 to 10.
Oh, I would say
1 to 50. I would say 1 to 10.
Oh, snap. Oh, damn.
Oh, wow.
Well, AOC is,
Aaron throwing shade.
Look, that's not what matters. Yes. I'm sure they've been together for a long time and they support each other, whatever. But
everything melts in the end.
When picture, exactly. We're all going to be dust. But a picture of him surfaced and people were like, oh, our boyfriend looks like a bin raccoon.
No.
Who said this? People
the
on Twitter.
Internet.
Mean people on Twitter.
Twitter's
so, you know, though, it's like, it's so British sounding, and it's like the way they insult is like, it's mean, but it's so like beautiful. Like,
yeah.
It's like sometimes it's like I can admire like the beautiful language.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? Like the way that they put together, like the way that people will insult Trump.
It's mm-hmm. like,
you
know? Cellar door.
Yes.
Bin raccoon.
Yeah, yeah. It's got it like the bin raccoon is like,
it's like a rhythm to it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to talk a little bit about, so like AOC made me think about, you know, I was thinking about Halloween, thinking about costumes, thinking about what we're all expected to wear and how much time it takes for us to put on our woman costume and how many different woman costumes there are. Like I recently moved and my closet situation is untenable. It is like a third the size of my closet in my old place, and there's not enough room for three dressers, and I'm sharing a space with my fiance, and it's like I have so much stuff. I have to put like boxes of sweaters in the garage, but I've gotten rid of everything I can get rid of because I have to wear like the idea of not having the right thing to wear for something makes me so nervous.
The amount of stress that you've just like you were like actually sputtering over your words.
I'm so stressed out about it. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, on one hand, like this is the world that we live in. On the other hand, this fucking sucks. And I've been thinking a lot about a feminist philosopher named Judith Butler, who
JB.
We have to respect JB. We, you know, in conversations about gender as a performance and femininity as a costume, like it's sort of like Judith Butler is the center of the star that provides all the gravity for those conversations. Mm-hmm. And she's somebody that if you haven't read her and you really like to get down with philosophy, you should. I'm going to read from her. I swear I'm not going to college prof out anymore on this. Judith Butler wrote in 1988.
JB.
1988. In this sense, gender is in no way a stable identity or locus of agency from which various acts proceed. Rather, it is an identity tenuously constituted in time, an identity instituted through a stylized repetition of acts. Further, gender is instituted through the stylization of the body and hence must be understood as the mundane way in which bodily gestures, movements, and enactments of various kinds constitute the illusion of an abiding gendered self. Basically, to paraphrase, gender's a performance.
Yeah.
JB.
We were trying to do it together.
No, I looked at you, but I, and then I, yeah.
Yeah.
Tien, how do you process like gender as a performance being more mainstreamed now than it ever has been?
I feel like it's always been mainstream. I mean, like we've all been performing gender since we were born and it's been forced upon us. But I think the conversation around what gender looks like or what is gender is now for the first time in the conversation. And folks that are being very thoughtful are exploring the fact that it is this social construct that has been pushed on us. Mm-hmm. Like personally, when I was younger and in the closet, it really, the performing of like high femininity to me was so important because mm-hmm. I wanted to pass as straight. And in my mind, that is what a straight woman like wore heels and I know that's so like reductive of that particular gender presentation. But for me, I wanted to pass as a straight woman. And so I focused so much on like what I thought it would be and what a society tells you that women should dress like. So it was like long hair, makeup, you know, like all the things that were kind of that are thrown at us all the time. And then when I came out, I went through a phase of like wanting to be read as queer and read as a lesbian. And that really kind of fucked with me too, because I like didn't necessarily align with what like people's stereotypical depictions of lesbians are, because we have been shown such a very specific kind of woman that is a lesbian, when in fact, like, as you said, all women, all genders can present however. But I like kind of wore butcher clothes and felt very uncomfortable. I went through a phase of wearing like my J. Crew printed phase. I would wear like short sleeve button down shirts from the men's department that had like, you know, the ones that have like boats on them and like weird patterns. And I mean, you guys knowing me now, that is just like not how I present. But I did that for a whole year and I felt like closer to what I was trying to figure out. So all of this to say is that it's like a long journey that can change however you want to change. And it's about how you feel and how you want to present to the world in a way that makes you feel good. And now I've gotten to a place now where I'm like, you know, I don't care if people can read me whether or not I'm a queer or a lesbian, because I am one. And this is how I'm going to present in the world as goth Mario.
What fascinates me is, as someone who doesn't dress up that often, it's like when you really put in the effort to dress up, the world changes the way they treat you. Mm-hmm. The world treats you different, not just different, but better, a lot better. Like you are treated better, like the way someone will open your car door if you're like, you know, valeting, whatever it is. Like, but that's a terrible example. Mm-hmm. I couldn't think of a good example out of my head, but I was just like, or I had a friend, it's like she went to the same bank every day, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. she'd show up kind of looking like a hobo, like just like whatever from the gym, ignored. One day is like kind of dressed up. Oh, ma'am, like sit over here. Oh, go to this line. Like it's literally the way you walk through the world. It changes the way that people interact and treat you. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that it's a performance, it's like, well, like there's a reason why people, you know, it's like there is a result oriented aspect to mm-hmm. that, right? It's like if I need certain things from the world, it's like the way sexuality can be like treated as though, like when women weaponize it, it's like they're kind of like dinged for weaponizing it, but it is a true power, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're that. So these are, this is a very, you know, fascinating thing to me because it's like I am a person who doesn't like to put in the time, but when you do put in the time, it does change the way you can, or in my experience, it's changed the way I can navigate through mm-hmm. the world or certain rooms or with strangers. And sometimes that attention is very unwanted. And so it's like, because it's unwanted, I'm like, I don't want to try.
Well, right. People assume that when you dress up like that, that you want the way that they're going to, like that choosing yeah. to dress is always for other people and the way that other people are going to treat you. And I don't know that men experience the same thing as much as women do. Dana, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, sort of jumping off that, I think when you dress a certain way, it absolutely conveys to the world how you want to be treated. But also, I've noticed that when I dress up a certain way, I carry myself differently and approach, I don't know, like, you know how sometimes when you wear a costume, like, not like saying you become that costume, but in sort of like a superhero way, like whatever. Yeah. It's like, sometimes I find that if I'm in like, because I normally dress like whatever, but if I'm in like heels and a blazer and blah, blah, like, I think I like my spine is straighter and I think I act a certain way different. Like, I think, not to get all like back to philosophy, but like the mask becomes the person. All the,
outside
like,
in. It's outside,
outside
in.
Outside in. Yeah. I find sometimes when I dress up in like a dress and wear a full face of makeup, I feel more competent.
I mean, it's like after a breakup, if I feel really bad or something, it's like I've definitely done a thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to like dress up and like feel a little bit more human and not spend the whole day in my pajamas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it can be like the cognitive dissonance of it. It's like, oh, well, if I'm, you know, put together, that must mean I am put together.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like I'm sad, but I'm smiling.
Yeah.
Am I happy?
I'm happy. This is
who
what
am I?
Looks like.
How do I get a trip to Holland?
Well, like honestly, dressing up in clothes.
You know what that means?
Like Sweden? Holland?
You know what Holland means. We learned it on this podcast. Holland is where you can have the.
It is Holland.
Yeah, it's yeah. Holland.
It's where you can have the what?
What?
I don't remember. I don't remember the last 8 years of my life.
The way you sounded so attacked. You were just like, how dare you? I don't know. I don't know, Kieran. I don't fucking know.
What is it? My brain is full and it's a one in, one out policy. Oh. So
Holland is where you can go to have the if you're not into living, you know, they'll help you out in the hospital.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to add is
Ryan just glazes over. I was like, you know, so now in my life and in my circles, it's like, maybe we should go to Holland. You know, it's always a
I actually thinking that of Midsommar. I thought that you were pitching the Midsommar because she's really sad at the beginning of that movie.
Right.
And then she Midsommars.
I mean, so
I like Midsommar as a verb is also good. Sorry, yeah. We're interrupting.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one thing, though, about like trying to dress a certain way. Sometimes I think putting on a got it together costume kind of can kickstart me in a way that will like make me feel like I got it together. But on the other hand, if there's like something deeper and more pressing that's wrong than just simply I'm feeling a little off, then dressing up and being like I'm going to be okay because I'm dressed up is sort of like if I just sat here and started coughing and it's like I have pneumonia now, like you can't make yourself have a thing inside from like presenting it outside.
No, I think it can if nothing is actually medically wrong with you and you're just like I have the blahs, it can be like a little boost.
One thing, I was recently getting my makeup done. This is a thing that like...
Humble brag.
No, I know. It's getting my makeup done and the makeup artist, like I was like really sleepy before and the makeup artist, after he was done like putting eyeliner on me, he backs up and he goes, oh, it's amazing how just a single black line can make such a difference. And it was like, oh my God.
Love this man. Let's meet this man and have him on the pod. Everyone else is like, ugh-ing. And I was like, I want to know him.
Right. But it's
take
like,
take that guy around.
But it's like, oh,
be
okay.
Mean to
this
people.
This is eventually the thing that your like woman outfit is like what people expect you to be all the time. So like if I'm not wearing eyeliner, one time I showed up the makeup room at a cable news channel, not wearing the red lipstick I was normally wearing. And the makeup people were like, hello, can I help you? And I was like, I'm here four times a week. And they were like, oh, Erin, I didn't recognize you without your red lipstick on. It was like, holy fuck. Have I become the thing that I put on my face? Have I become the thing that
I
wear?
Like that lady had facial blindness.
It's possible.
Anytime I get my makeup
done. I don't
done,
recognize you without the red lipstick. I've passed you in grocery stores and streets.
Wait, really?
No.
No, you haven't.
No, I haven't.
How would you
I'm
even,
joking.
How
Jesus.
Would you even know? See, that's the thing that like.
How would you even know that you passed me if you didn't know who I am?
It's true. That's the thing that scares me is like, what if I get to a point where people only know the version of me that took the time in the morning to blow dry my hair straight and put makeup on my face? And like,
sometimes I get scared to use Instagram filters because I think it's going to give me body dysmorphia. And I legitimately
think it does give people that.
I was doing it, and you know, I was doing like one that like made my lips bigger and made my eyes bigger and made my skin like smoother, and I was like looking at myself, and I like couldn't look away from it. It was very like Narcissus in the river, in the stream. Someone who knows Greek mythology, whatever it is,
the body of water.
The body of water, and I was like, I am going to literally and metaphorically drown myself by staring at this reflection of what a prettier version of myself would look like.
She's actually still looking at it now.
Yeah, really I'm staring at it. Yeah, she's really
been
troubling.
Maintaining eye contact with her big-eyed self for this entire
She's
part.
Surprisingly cogent, given the amount of time she's been spending looking at her own photograph.
Dana's a really smart woman.
I had to, like, wrestle it away from myself. I was like, no, don't do that. Don't use Instagram filters.
That's a great Justin Bieber video.
Well, so
a music video waiting to happen. It's just like your own hand pulling your own hand away. Erin, this is the reason why I don't try.
That's my hell.
Everything you're describing is keep the expectation low. And then it's like, this is what you get. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, when people are like, wow. When the opposite is also true. When people are like, wow.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah, it's too much. It's like, all right, everybody relax. What do we think? Was I walking around with poop on my face? Damn.
When I get makeup done for shows and stuff, it feels like I'm in drag. Like, I feel like I am not myself. And then I spend the whole day just being like, and I've gotten better now because I'm like in the industry and you kind of have to. But I do feel I feel like it's my drag when I get a full face of makeup on.
Yeah.
Feeling like yourself no matter what you're wearing is remembering that the core of the individual is the same regardless of what the outer presentation is. And
that's
a kind
philosopher.
Of, yeah,
now.
Well, that's an internal. Yeah. No, but that is an internal shift that I think that maybe culturally we don't necessarily support, but it's remembering that you genuinely can present however you want. And it's
totally.
Like the internal narrative is the same.
Yeah.
But there's,
I think you can to a point because there, I mean, if you're like non-binary and you're presenting in a way that challenges folks' perception of how men and women should dress, like you aren't safe in certain spaces. So I would love, like, I think you can't, I would love for people to be able to present however they can present, but some folks do anyway and can't feel safe.
Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the internal narrative experience, not like the external results are very real, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you're going to have to deal with and interface with the world.
Right.
And
I mean, you walk,
consequences for your
you
choices.
Walk through the world knowing who you are deep down inside, but then you're also getting all of this information and feedback that contradicts that, where you walk through the world and, you know, one day you walk into the bank looking like ass, and then the next day you walk into the bank wearing, I don't know, curtains that you made a dress out of, like Scarlet and Gone with the Wind. And people treat you differently. So even though deep down
curtains is the good one.
The curtains is the good one. They're not like, she's poor and desperate. They're like, no, she's, whoa, look at that wealthy lady.
Also
she's really
family.
Trying. She's, we're a little frightened. That's what I want to go for generally.
Yeah, if I'm wearing curtains, call my mom. It's danger time.
I have to wonder if maybe I'm not at that point where I'm like, oh, I'm whoever I am, because I like I'm drawn. I really like dressing up for Halloween, and like I'm not like a weird not that cosplayers are weird, but that's like not my scene. But like I do sometimes like even in like my regular clothes, like feeling like I'm putting on a persona. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes I make jokes, like I take a picture of myself in my mirror and I'm like, look of the day. And I like make a joke of like the type of person I am that day. And I do sort of like putting on the costume cape of dressing like a different type of person and becoming more confident.
It's you're treating it like play, though. Yeah. It sounds like it's with like a sense of play and curiosity, which is probably, if you have to participate, a good way to approach it. Yeah. So that it feels fun, like the way a kid would dress up.
It's like Beyonce, her like Sasha Fierce, but my Sasha Fierce is like someone who can go to a grocery store and like be confident interacting with people.
This is very sad.
I know.
Very sad.
But that's it. It's like her Sasha Fierce is like her alter ego, and mine is like, I can call a doctor and make an appointment. And like, I need that. I'm a sad person.
You're making me sad.
No, I get that. It's like those daily errands. You need to have a look.
Yeah.
I feel that way. I have a specific look for when I go to the doctor. I have a specific, you know, like, I get that.
I
can feel the eyes.
Thank you.
It's what it comes down to is like, as you guys are talking, I'm like, wait, is this why I'm single? It's just like also there's also like a little bit of an internal revelation happening.
One of the things that I really.
It's because you don't have a relationship look.
Yeah, you got to put on your girlfriend costume.
Yeah.
You can get one in a plastic bag in one of the Halloween stores. Sexy girlfriend costume.
I just need to borrow your red lip and your blazer, Dana.
You looked at me, paused. That was like devastating.
I'm so sorry. I know. I didn't mean that to come up as cruel as it did, and I apologize. You were a valuable person.
I've gotten into blazers lately.
Because I'm not wearing a blazer.
Yeah, I know.
I think blazers really,
I know.
She's wearing a turtleneck. Blazers really can give you a jump start. I was texting Tana about
this. Actually,
I'm not wearing a blazer. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got a blazer.
I gave you a challenge.
I know.
None of us are wearing blazers. People can't hear that.
You would, if I were wearing a blazer, you could hear the blazer in my voice.
Yeah.
I think I can hear when Aaron's wearing a blazer.
Yeah.
I can hear it over a text.
Do you find that in heels? Sometimes I feel way more powerful when I'm in heels.
This is going to sound.
Can stomp a man's throat.
This is going to sound like I'm telling on myself a little bit here, but growing up, because we didn't have a lot of money, now as an adult who's been working for, you know, however long and having no children and thus having disposable income, I feel very confident when I'm wearing something that I couldn't have afforded when I was a kid, which is like a really like awful thing to tell myself. But like, you know, I have clothing that I never could have afforded and I bought it for myself being like, I feel like I want to have this thing that I could never have had before.
That's very empowering. Symbolically, I mean, one, because expensive things are often a better quality. Like they are.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then also that's really empowering. It's like a reminder to yourself of like that you've earned a thing.
Yeah.
It's also the brainwashing of capitalism.
Yeah. Yes. It also like it's a kind of ugly joy. It's like I put it on and I'm like, I feel great that I'm wearing this, you know, blazer from Nordstrom that I bought or whatever. And then I, you know, go about my day and I live in a town with like a fucking very bad homelessness problem. And it's like, oh, also I have some of the things that I have are obviously indirectly at the expense of other people. And it makes me feel bad. So I'm like, the thing that makes me feel good also makes me feel bad. And it's, I think that applies also to makeup as a like very femme presenting woman, putting on makeup and seeing the way that I'm treated. As a result of it, I see that that treatment isn't accessible to other people in other demographics. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that treatment comes a little bit at the expense of those people in demographics. And so, yeah, I guess it's just like a complicated way to process this costume that is available for me to put on and that I put on and that I take advantage of. And then I'm like, fuck, I'm taking advantage of a hierarchy that sucks.
But sometimes I feel like, okay, like sexuality would be available to me and I get annoyed with myself for not utilizing it more because so many things aren't available to me. You know, like I can't walk into the room as a white man. Like I can't, I'm never going to be able to walk in with
male. They're like, here, have a Star Wars.
That's right. I'm never going to walk in with that male privilege. And so it's like, okay, but like, we all have advantages and disadvantages. No matter who you are, you have something. You know, and whether that's
I think that sexuality is a devil's bargain, though. I think it's like a thing where you can get a short-term advantage by using it, but a long-term massive disadvantage.
Because there's consequences down the line for how it's perceived in the culture.
And I think that there's a limitation to how high you can get using it.
Nobody slept their way all the way to the top.
And forever. Yeah. Again, like I think like presenting hypersexual can get you a tiny bit of an advantage temporarily, but in the long run, it costs.
That's just. I'm sorry. That's a pitch for a Netflix show.
It's
just literally that's the tagline. That is literally the tagline. No one slept their way all to the top, and I was like, I'm watching.
Yeah,
I am watching this woman try. Fuck yes,
do it.
I am in. We believe in her. Yeah. The Breaking Bad of fucking.
Yeah, but that's like,
the Aaron, Breaking Bad.
Fucking bad.
Fucking bad.
Can I tell you all the most shameful presentation change that afterward I was embarrassed for myself.
Go for it.
Yeah. I was at a coffee shop, humble brag.
Heard of it.
After going on a...
whatever you say, I want you to know, I am going to, at the end of it, I'm just going to be like, nobody slept their way all the way to the top. Like, whatever you say, you could just finish the sentence with like, and I was sobbing. And then it was just like...
I was at a coffee shop and I had just gone on a jog. No makeup, slightly sweaty, in a Hysteria t-shirt.
Woo!
And shorts and gym shoes. And at my coffee shop, Harry Styles walks in, a very attractive person who up until that point, I did not realize I was sexually attracted to. But then you see him in person, you're like, yes, I am. Involuntarily.
He's got high hair.
Yeah, he does.
And did you see his new video? It's very queer and
very
hot.
Queer and sexy.
Yeah.
Involuntarily, I took my hair out of its ponytail and took off my t-shirt, so I was just in a sports bra.
Yeah!
And I didn't even recognize it. It was like, I like blacked out, and I came to. And sure. I was like, oh, it's because he's attractive, and this is just what happened. And on the way home, I was like, what's wrong with you, Dana?
Nobody slept their way all the way to the top. I feel like I'm fucking up the tagline. I've added a couple
of... Yeah, like, nobody got in bed and had sex to the top of the game.
Yeah, exactly. It's just gotten worse and worse as I've said it more and more. I like kind of have forgotten it and we'll have to listen back to the podcast.
I had a similar experience with Mahershala Ali. He was at a... He is, I think, the next Meryl Streep in terms of like how fucking talented he is. But he was at like... This was like when he'd only done House of Cards, and he was at a an award show that I was a date to somebody who was nominated for an award. I know, not a humble brag,
just a brag,
a hard brag.
It's a hard brag, but we ended up in the same like little cocktail area, and it was like he looked at me, and I was like, like I couldn't. I had to leave. I was like, I'm out. I got to get out of here. This is too much for me to process. But at the same time, that was when I was like the most glammed and confident I could possibly have been. Also, I had a boyfriend. But it was just like, I was even at the top of my confidence, I couldn't bring myself to.
You know what I say to that, Erin?
What?
No one slept their way all the way to the top.
Okay, this was one. This one is funny. It was like 3 in the morning, maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was in a grocery store, a Vons. I went to go get juice.
3 o'clock in the morning?
Yes, I was going to finish. I was working on that film about women rebel soldiers in Nepal that went to HBO. That was like a little independent documentary that I was working on, and it
sounds
was like
so fucking awesome.
The deadline. It was like we were on the deadline to like get it done, and you know, I really looked, and I mean, normally I won't wear makeup and stuff, but it's like I looked genuinely like I'm talking like UGG boots and like sweatpants over the UGG boots.
You
and
look
like
sick.
You
look
yeah. Like you. I looked yeah.
I mean, orange juice because
like something was wrong.
C.
It was like the bun was like wrong. Yeah. You know what I mean, it was like it was like there's like
you escaped from like a hospital where you should have been quarantined for like rabies.
A little quarantine-y kind of vibes, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Bin raccoon so, in the bin.
Now there's another girl who is kind of like also like a brown chick who has clearly been, because it must have been like a Friday or a Saturday night. And so it's like she walks by the juice in these like heels and she's so pretty.
You're
and
like
just
a before like, and after.
Oh, and it was like the guy from Sex in the City was there.
Which one?
Which one, Aiden?
Yeah. He was there watching the two of us, watching us. And it was like shameful. I don't feel shame. And it was like, it was rough. I told my mother about this. My mother was like, well, Gideon, you should know, like you live in Los Angeles, like Gideon, if you're going to leave the house, you have to try, Gideon. You can't just be walking around looking like anything. And I was like, it was 3 in the morning at a grocery
what
store.
What was Aiden doing at the grocery store? At
John
the
Corbin,
morning?
Right? Is that his name?
It was very sad. It was a very quiet, loud tragedy that like no one else could like appreciate. Because like this girl just like walks by beautifully and then it's like, I just trail behind. And it's like, don't mind me.
It was hilarious. You're like her shadow. I was like, yeah. The shadow's alive.
That's right. It was like in Us. Yeah. It's like in Jordan Peele's movie. I was the one who lived
tethered.
In the basement. Yeah. I was tethered.
Tether.
I was like, don't look.
By the
me.
Way, the tethered, easy 2019 Halloween costume.
So good.
Yeah. Such
so
a good one.
People, I think, are going to, my theory is that this year it's going to be the year where the girl is the midsummer girl in a flower crown because girls love flower crowns. Mm. And her boyfriend's going to be in a bear costume. Oh,
oh yeah,
because low impact couple, people couple get costumes. To be like, ah, clever.
Well, and we were gonna go as the evil lifeguard couple from Stranger Things.
It's cute,
because Josh kind of looks a little bit like the guy. He just needs a mullet. He just needs a mullet. He just needs a mullet wig, and I sort of look like vaguely like the girl. I just need like a red swimsuit and like a banana clip.
Yeah,
this is why this year I'm gonna dress like what's her name that married that Jonas brother,
Priyanka Chopra.
I'm joking.
I will say when I
we
was,
don't look alike. That was a. Right.
What are you looking at me? I didn't say you looked alike.
No, I'm just competing with someone.
Okay, guys, what do you think, besides the Midsummer costume, what do you think is going to be the big 2019 Halloween costume?
Ooh, Fat Thor.
Fat Thor?
What?
Oh, yeah.
Did you not see the new Avengers?
Yeah. Are people going to do the Joker?
Oh,
yeah.
People are.
That'd be a good girl costume. Yeah.
Oh,
like
no, let's just forget the Joker happened and culturally move on. Don't dwell. Just everyone just move on. Forget about it.
I think political themed costumes might be, like sexy whistleblower is like an easy one.
Oh.
Just dress like a referee.
Yeah.
Sexy referee. Call yourself a whistleblower.
That's fun.
But yeah, I think that there'll be some political ones, there'll be low impact ones. I think that like pop culturally, there's so much culture now that it's impossible to know like how people are going to dress. The Tethered.
Tethered I think is a very good one.
Are you going to go as anything, Kieran?
Yeah, I told you I'm going to get that Taco Bell costume. Then I'm going to go into a...
Are they letting you keep it?
Well, I got to talk to them. But yes, let's put it in the world that it's a couture fucking chalupa dress that's made for my body. So let's go get that thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it fits me. Mm-hmm. And then I really do want to go into a Taco Bell and be like, what do you guys have here?
You're the heiress of Taco Bell.
Oh, my God.
Do you have any food? You know,
my father said I could have anything I wanted.
That's right. And I was like, but I shall know what to order. You know, a lot of that. Like,
bring me one
wearing
of everything, please.
Yes.
Papa would want it.
Yeah. It's for Papa. For Papa.
For Papa, please.
My name is Esmeralda Bell of the Taco Bell family. Everybody thought you're like the Anastasia of Taco Bell. Like, you're the one survivor of a massacre of the family. Wow, I love this.
I think we should pitch this.
Let's pitch this out.
Tagline?
Nobody sleeps their way all the way to the top. There's too many their ways. There's too many alls and there's too many their ways. You had a very pithy, elegant version of it, Ryan.
Give me the notes off mic, Kieran, okay?
No, yours was good.
Yeah, we're adding a bunch.
I was saying it's pithy and elegant, the way you did.
Yours was the equivalent of James Cameron walking into the room and pitching aliens by doing a dollar sign at the end. A thing that I came up with.
Yeah, I feel like you could walk into Shondaland right now and just say that, and she'd be like,
Yes. All right, ladies, let's put on our commercial costumes and read ads, and then we're going to take a break and come back, and we're going to do The Hills We'll Die On.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course, they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course, they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst of the worst. Then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
And we're back. We are at the part of the show where we take really strong stances about things that really don't matter that much compared to the other things in the grand scheme. It's The Hills We'll Die On. Let's get started with the listener hill.
My name is Shanda and I'm from Michigan. The hill I will die on is more is not always merrier. Don't wait for me to commit to plans and then tell me you hope I don't mind, but you invited your friend Jane.
fuck.
Listen, I mind. I may not have energy for Jane, and yes, she's nice, but I don't want to tell her my embarrassing or personal stories. So please keep in mind, more is not always merrier.
Wow, fuck Jane.
Yeah,
first
fuck
of
Jane.
All.
Yeah. Jane, fuck Jane.
Jane, can.
Jane is a bitch.
I hard agree. I hate that.
Yeah?
Yes, I don't like it.
It depends on like what the sort of plan is. Like if it was like it's a friend that I haven't caught up with for a long time and I have a lot of personal things I want to say.
Yes, that.
Then I don't want somebody else, you know. But, you know, I guess if it's like a party situation, I don't mind.
A part, but what she's describing is like that thing where you're like, oh, I made plans with my friend who you probably have, like you have probably haven't seen. And
yeah,
they've invited
Jane, that Jane, bitch.
I agree. Hard agree.
They're big guys. Everybody's been making boomerangs all
sorry.
Episode.
We haven't seen each other in a really long time and now we're having.
We're children.
We're children right now.
All right. I'm going
that's
to.
That's a good one though, Aaron.
That is a really.
I'm going to use that as a reaction all the time.
Captures Dana's essence fully and completely.
She doesn't move very much in the picture, which is what's hilarious. She's just literally giving a middle
it's
finger.
It's Dana giving a middle finger and shaking with rage, it looks like. Okay, I'm going to do my hill now. As you all know that I have a very paranoid and conspiracy-minded brain. Like, I love... Also,
I like the setup.
Yeah.
Like the setup.
Like, I can't... Every single day I go out into the world and I'm like, what's the scam? What's going on here? So here's something I was thinking about today as I was driving in traffic. I think that part of the reason that traffic is getting so bad everywhere is because driving apps make everybody worse. And it's just, they make everybody just a tiny bit worse. Like, everybody, like, and driving apps, for example, my Waze will sometimes not give me enough of a heads up that I need to get all the way over to the right in on the freeway, which will cause me to make like a really, you know, jack move or whatever. And I see that all the time. Sometimes I see people driving and it's like, why are four people trying to take a left off this road with no signal? It's fucking apps.
Yeah.
Apps are driving us into like these really nonsensical places that we should just be able to use our senses to overcome. I think that driving apps are partly to blame for how bad everything is.
I have a tiny hypothetical question that I want to pose about Waze. Hypothetically, do you think people would abuse a system if Waze is like, if you're in a super rush, like you're super late, you can press something and it'll give you a quicker route
yes.
and everyone else will be in a
yes,
normal...
Yes, people will abuse that.
People do abuse that.
But like, wouldn't that be a perfect world if Waze could like manage people where if you're not in a huge rush, you go a certain way. But if you're in a huge rush, they'll tell you this way.
Yes, a world without violence yeah. and equality and justice.
I don't like Waze. You guys still use Waze?
I am using Waze. Well, partly because I programmed Cookie Monster's voice onto it. And it just, like, was always a delight. It would be like, you take left turn. And it was like every single time I would turn it on, I would just start laughing.
I didn't know that Cookie Monster was on it.
You can do Oscar the Grouch too.
Wow.
There's certain like trucking companies and stuff that actually don't program left turns into their because of the amount of time it takes and the amount of time it increases the route. And Waze is, it's like all left turns.
Waze
it's
wants me
joke.
To make unprotected lefts like I'm yeah. suicidal.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
right.
Raw
it's
dog
like,
it,
this
those
is
left
like
turns.
The version. It's like a, it's like the Holland of, it's like the Holland of your,
driving apps.
Do you want to go with your hill?
Wait, I was going to, there was one other thing.
Well, about apps?
No.
Bad said, driving?
Oh, in The Office. There was an episode of The Office very early on where they're using a GPS and they're right going, by the bushes
oh, yeah.
and then they just drive into the lake. They're like, just trust it. Just trust it. The app knows and they just like end up in a lake anyway.
So. Okay, Dana.
All right. My hill is slightly more serious, but it pissed me off because I was watching the Democratic debates last night. Let's stop using the phrase abortion should be safe, legal, comma, and rare. I hate that phrase. I hate that compromise. Sure, I get what you're going for. You're saying like, yeah, it should be rare because we should be funding like contraception and sex education. Great. But by saying it, you're stigmatizing it. Like, let's start by making sure it's safe and legal, period. Like, heart surgery should be safe, legal, mm-hmm. and rare. But no one says that because no one shames people for getting heart surgery. By the time that if you're inserting the rare in, no matter what your point is, you're conceding ground to the far right who are going to make sure that it's neither safe nor illegal. Mm-hmm. So just stop saying that because that's a devil's compromise and start with the first two and end with a period.
Also, Tulsi, I mean, we talked, listen, I got to talk about the debate earlier. And like Tulsi Gabbard was the one who brought that up.
Yeah.
And like, what the fuck, Tulsi?
Tulsi, you're hot.
You're stop out. Talking. You're out of the.
I'm sexually attracted to Tulsi Gabbard. Keep going.
That's not the point I was going to make, but thank you for admitting that in this safe space. No, I think
Dana's still looking at herself in the mirror.
And now I have a gray streak. I kind of look like Tulsi Gabbard.
She's
into like the Claire Saffitz, Stacey London thing.
Okay.
Rogue from X-Men.
Yeah, that makes sense. But
personal.
But like, she's not going to be in the next debate. So it's sort of like, and actually I think like that is a hill to die on, but that's not like a minor thing. I think that semantics and the words that we use when we talk about women's health really matter. And I totally agree.
It's one of those things where I agree with the point you're making. Like, yeah, in theory, it should be safe, legal, and rare because we're funding sex ed and contraception and like no one gets pregnant unless they want to. But don't say it because you're moving us backwards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, just to issue a quick correction, I used women's health again, which is a slip up that I constantly make and I'm trying to get better. I want to be more inclusive. The health of people who have uteruses.
Yeah.
Uterus care. Why don't we just call it uterus care?
I like that.
Histerology.
Hysteria.
I was trying to do a really cool, like, working. Yeah.
Very early on in this podcast, I think I tried to say something important during a hill, and Aaron was like, no. And maybe
it has
could
to be
a,
dumb.
It has to be very dumb.
Right,
dumb.
Slap me on the wrist. It has to be very dumb. I was so angry. I got a slap on the wrist. I hope you heard that on mic.
I hope the mics picked that up.
I hope
That was a legit slap.
That was.
Slap me on the wrist for having a serious hill. But it pissed me off and I had to say it.
Okay. That's
but it was
fair.
Also it also seemed like an action that neither of you have done in a really long time. It felt so unnatural. This is the weirdest thing I've seen.
All right, Karen, what's your hill?
Look at your own gif before you say what's
okay,
weird.
You're right. Okay. You're right.
Okay. If I go to a fancy restaurant and I have to order the food in advance in a line, fuck you.
Wait, what?
Are you talking about Pine and Crane?
Yeah.
Any of those Silver Lake fucking restaurants that make me stand in a line,
Squirrel.
Order my food.
Yeah.
And it's like, pay the tip also in the thing where I have stood, and now I have to get a number. I'm standing in a line. I have to get a number, and then you're going to bring it to me. I went to a restaurant this weekend where they made me get my own plates.
What?
And I was like, what? I'm not coming back here. You know who doesn't make you get your own plates? McDonald's.
Karen, was it a soup kitchen?
No, it...
You had to get your own plate?
Yes.
Wait, what restaurant was this?
I kind of don't want to shit on them because it's like, you know.
Legit.
You're definitely going back.
No. That's a place I go rarely because
I find it good.
What was the first restaurant that you all knew that I didn't know that sounded good?
Pine and Crane?
Is it good?
It's really good.
It is good, but they do
really
make
good.
You stand in line.
I don't want to stand in a line. I don't want to stand in a line. I don't want to do any work. I don't want to boil my food.
That's buzz face logic.
I don't want to boil my food at a table, okay? I don't want to, like, it's not quaint.
Oh, you don't like that?
I don't want to bake shit on the table. No, I am going out.
Where are you going to
bake? I don't
want
to do work.
No, I'm standing.
What are you talking about?
Like,
there's like a fondue one where you go and you do the fondue on the table.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's not fun. No, it's not fun. You know what's fun? Doing no work and eating food is fucking fun. Are you kidding me? You people are insane. This is insane.
This
isn't a bus face thing. This is a logic thing. This was a logic I had years before the bus face.
Kieran
this
someone,
is trash bag deal logic.
Kieran has someone standing next to her right now feeding her food. So
that is not true.
She's eating grapes.
She's
one
eating
by
grapes
one.
One by one. You don't see it, but someone is feeding her grapes right now.
It's insane. It is the idea that I'm supposed to go out and pay money to have to do more stuff. That's cooking. That's
her
called
face
cooking.
Is on a bus, people.
It's called cooking.
Yeah.
I don't cook in a restaurant.
Okay.
I want to stand in a restaurant. I want to stand.
Well, Kieran, thank you for wheeling in here today on a desk chair.
No. Hannibal Lecter style.
Oh, yeah.
Like not tethered.
Right. Okay, sure. Right, Tien.
Okay,
I'm
going to get as fired up as Kieran.
It's very upsetting. I haven't been that upset on a hill since Naomi Akparagon was here.
Oh, yeah, you guys got
into it. The hill that I will die on happened to me last night. I was in my own apartment and there was one of my neighbors was outside talking on the phone, but they were using speakerphone. Mm-hmm. Don't use your speakerphone in public places. Yeah. There's no reason why I should be hearing both sides of this conversation. If it's just you by yourself talking to someone on the phone, why are you using speakerphone?
I think at that point, you can go into the conversation. You can add.
I should have.
Through the window.
And it's not even like important things. It's not an important, like this particular conversation.
Did this person have two arms in a cast?
No. It took me a while to figure out what you were asking me.
Two arms and casts preventing them from
holding it. They were doing this thing. Like, it was too much to hold it to their ear. It was, they just needed to hold it in front of their mouth. And the person that they were talking to, their only responses on speakerphone were, yeah. Okay, babe, yeah. Mm, of course. Just like no need to be on speakerphone if the other person's responses are...
If you're recording the call, you have to have it on speaker for a lot of phone apps.
Did not seem
okay,
like
did not seem like a recording... Okay, have you done a speakerphone in public spaces?
No.
Okay. It's illegal to record in the state of California without permission.
Two-party consent, yeah. Okay. You have to have permission of both people. But in a lot of states, it's one-party consent. I think New York is a one-party consent. Yeah.
I always say the door. That's why every time I record an interview, like, I always say the door case thing. Okay, I'm starting recording now. And I hate my voice every time I do that. It's like, almost every single time I do like a journalistic thing, and every recording begins with, okay, I'm starting the recording now.
God. Okay, that's fair.
Fuck speakerphone.
There's a really good South Park episode about exactly this.
Oh,
where
really?
Cartman is just using speakerphone incessantly. And
it's rude.
Yeah, it's extremely rude.
Maybe you're just sad that it wasn't a better conversation.
I think maybe that was what it was. Like, if I'm going to hear both sides, let me know. I mean, I use speakerphone in my own apartment when I'm too lazy to hold my phone, so I put it on my chest. Nobody does that.
Are you lying down?
No. Yeah, I'm just, like, sitting on my couch and, like...
That's fun.
Tien's demonstrating. This is an audio medium, but
like
Tien is leaning back.
And then you have a pocket there.
Yeah,
that's
but
the overall.
Not for this pocket. Normally, if I'm just like laying on my couch and talking, I'll just do
Her boobs are like the cell phone holder.
These tiggle.
Okay, that's pretty good, Hill. All right, I think that's all the time we have today. Tien, Kieran, and Dana, thank you so much for coming by. Alyssa Master Monaco, thanks for calling in. There'll be more Hysteria next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support, and to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadina Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicollet Avenue, which is where Alex Preddy was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really... feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a five-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.